got it. Here we go. Write to us at bynorthwest.com. Come on, send us a letter. Got to write him to get him, as they used to tell us at Breezy Point Camp, Tom. Got to write him to get him. Don't sit there and cry. Write your mom and dad. Tell them what a great time you're having. Stop crying. Write him to get him.
Did a lot of crying at your camp, huh?
Did a lot of crying. God, I hated it.
You hated camp?
Sleepaway. Oh, sleepaway camp? Oh.
Yeah, I didn't like my camp either, primarily because you had to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning or whatever, where they play the damn reveille, and you had to make your bed, and they check behind your ears. Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah, that's the worst. And then they put you back to bed. That was it. So those were the three things. It was play the horn, make your bed, check behind your ears. All right, everybody, get some shut-eye. It's going to be a long day tomorrow. Playing the horn, making your bed, and checking behind your ears. We had fun activities like archery and wood
belt
carving,
making.
Lanyards. Here's another lanyard. Highlight of coming back from Breezy Point Camp, my dad smoking a cigar, throws the cigar out the window, unbeknownst to my father, blows back in to the back window where my brother and I are, and sets my sleeping bag on fire. And I don't know, sleeping bags back then, I guess they were made with
things, highly flammable.
The opposite of asbestos. I don't know what it was. And my dad yelling at my brother and I, like it's our fault that the sleeping bag is fully engulfed in the back seat. What are you guys doing back there? Yeah. Oh, Dad, we thought it'd be fun to set the sleeping bag on fire in a Ford Pinto.
Before we go to camp.
Yeah, no, this is coming home.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Picking me up and bringing me home from Lake Winnipesaukee there. Oh, gosh. Hannah Scott. Got to get Hannah in. I didn't even blow all that time telling stories. Nobody wants to hear my stupid stuff. Little butterflies, baby, I'm on my life. My temperature's great mood. I'm going to get my tractor out there. It is coming down here in Clee Ellen. There's your weather report. Yeah. All right. So, Hannah, did you get a chance? The big question is, did you get a chance to ask the question about Nicole Thompson, which is about Dory Monson's producer?
I did. I did not pull the answer for you, though. I didn't know you knew about it. So I was saving it for her. Let's see. I can try to get it to Jacob.
Them.
But I did.
Find
I did.
Though. We're going to take that from them. All right, so let's talk about the overall. So the governor with his mask on, again, opening up more counties.
Yeah, so this was like the good news train press conference, the whole beginning of it. So first round of good news coming for almost the entire state.
Effective Monday, 7 of our 8 regions of our Healthy Washington plan will open up in phase 2. This will mean increased economic activity, increase access to restaurants and the like. We're very happy about this. This means that 92% of all the people in the state of Washington will be able to move forward with some additional activities. Very pleased about this. The reason we've been able to do this is that these regions have met at least 3 out of 4 of the metrics of performance that our phase plan have set forth.
So, not such good news for the entire state.
The only region that has not been able to move forward is the South Central region. That's Ellensburg, Yakima, Tri-Cities, Walla Walla area. And we're looking forward to them moving forward as soon as possible. The metrics that have dictated this decision are that 14-day trends in new cases for 100,000 residents and new COVID hospitalizations needed to meet the metric, as well as 7-day averages for ICU capacity and percent positive COVID tests. The South Central region currently meets 2 of those 4. We just need to get them over one more so that they can join the other 92% of the state. We look forward to that.
So they're looking forward to that, as is everyone in that region, which is, again, going to be the Tri-Cities, Walla Walla, Yakima, that area. And I did just hear from Senator Brown, this is going to be our state senator for Benton County area, I believe, says this is heartbreaking news for the Tri-Cities. Moving to phase two, she said, would have given the small business owners and workers a glimmer of some hope in the midst of the pandemic shutdown. And that if the governor means what he says about wanting to open up the rest of the state, he should immediately make more vaccines and additional resources available to the region, and that she will continue to push him to do that and push for the passage of Senate Bill 5114, which would move the entire state to phase two, which now really applies just to her region. So,
hey, Hannah, just on that quickly, is there that for that particular district, is there like more like resistance, mask resistance or distancing resistance in that particular community? Has it become like a political thing? And is that why they are behind, whereas 7/8 of the state aren't? Or is that irrelevant to what's going on here?
I don't know that I would say that that's irrelevant. No. So this region includes Yakima and then there's the Tri-Cities areas, Benton and Franklin County. I believe back at the beginning of the pandemic, they filed suit or passed a resolution in one of their councils, right? To not follow the original mandates.
Okay.
And Yakima County is where we had, the explosion in cases a couple of times. You have a lot of your agricultural workers out there, a lot of Hispanic folks who live in tight quarters, things like that, where they were not masking for a very long time. I'm not sure if that's changed since then, but so that there's been some resistance in the past. Yeah, for sure. And on the good news train, though, there was some more good news.
But hold on a second.
Oh, yes, more.
Let me just say something. To draw the direct connection between supposed resistance to wearing a mask and COVID, and overall, I don't know if we have the numbers that show that they're not wearing the mask. I know that you can't go into grocery stores in Eastern Washington without wearing it. You can't go in. There's restaurants have been closed down. So all the same places that the governor's lockdowns affecting people having to wear masks, that's all still happening. It's not like it's the wild, wild west. In Yakima, people are still wearing the mask. Are they in closer contact with one another? Do you have more people living in more confined spaces? Yes, right? Because what are they? 13% of the population is Hispanic and tend to travel more. And therefore, it's not about a mask thing. It is more because you don't get COVID by going to a restaurant that's already been proven very small percent, 1.4% of transmission occurring in restaurants. It's in the home. That's where we've been told to stay. So let's not just say, oh, because Eastern Washington is a bunch of rebels, this is what they get. And by not wearing masks, the governor is showing that they're not keeping up with his program, right? So we're not making that direct connection, right? Are we
no,
doing
no,
that?
No, I'm
right.
not
I hope
saying
that's
that
not the case.
At all.
That's good. That's
on,
good.
Tom asked if there
yeah,
had
oh, that's
right.
why so, I asked the yeah, question, was, John.
Yeah.
There's never
early
been a direct
on.
Line drawn to that.
Early just, on, right. But yeah. early on, it takes 14 days to get it, then to get over it. So early on, so anybody that got it earlier on doesn't have it now. So the thing is, right now, why are the numbers high in Yakima? That's the question, but it's not about people not wearing masks. They're all wearing their masks, doing the stuff they're supposed to do, but it has to do with more of the population and the density of the population in Yakima. But go ahead.
I will say this. Early on, the governor called Yakima specifically out for not following the mask mandate. It was a very big deal. But that, you know, again, that was months and months ago. I don't know what the current situation is. Okay. Back to the good news train. We've got good news on case counts and compliance.
They have gone down fairly significantly over the last few weeks, and we couldn't be more pleased about that. We're doing that because people have been following science. They have been masking up. Business owners have been complying with the healthy rules and being very innovative in this way. People are showing smart ways to protect themselves and their families by not having unnecessary gatherings in their homes. And because we have been doing these things, because we have been following the science, this is a large part why these numbers are going down and why we're being able to open up 92% of our state to further economic activity.
So that was good news. There was also good. Yes.
May I counter?
Yeah.
He doesn't know if people are having less parties. Really? People having less social parties. He's aware of that. The Super Bowl, people were sitting around, just two people were there.
Well, we wouldn't know yet parties. If the Super Bowl, right? So that was just last Sunday. It would take us
Well, we also know we never got the
weeks
Thanksgiving.
To get that.
We didn't get the Thanksgiving surge. We didn't get the Christmas surge. We didn't get the new. We might have got a little before more people in New Year's, but the Thanksgiving didn't happen, and people still gathered. They still traveled, and the same thing with Thanksgiving and Christmas. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
I will say this. I went to the grocery store on Saturday before Super Bowl and over by the mall by my house, and there were a lot of people buying stuff up for Super Bowl parties. So we'll see in a couple of weeks what happens with that. It didn't seem to me that people were avoiding them myself. But at any rate, I have – oh, so vaccines. That's the other thing he said was that vaccines were doubling. We're in the high percentile for getting doses from the government. And I think we were right about to hit putting 1 million doses into people's arms. So that's trending upwards. We're waiting for more from the feds. They should be coming. And on that note, I did ask him about Nicole Thompson's question, which was about her parents or grandparents, the 81 and 65 with some underlying health conditions of Skagit County. They had kept getting their vaccination appointments bumped to way back to like April every time, and they were frustrated. So they called over to the Mass vaccination site in Wenatchee yesterday, I believe, and said, how many appointments do you have available for tomorrow? And they said like 246 or something like that. And they were like, whoa. So they drove over there today and they got vaccinated. So I asked about the why so many in Wenatchee and not any over here in Skagit County. And this is what the governor said.
We're going to have these situations 1,000 times a day in the state of Washington. 1,000 times a day, someone will call a clinic close to their house and then find out someone farther away from their house has more doses available. And the reason that is these doses are become available at different times. We can't predict exactly how many people will show up at the clinic at that particular time. And so the experience that these folks had is going to be replicated thousands of times a day. And I would love to tell you that we could solve that problem. We can't. And I'm just so happy that these folks did get a life-saving vaccine. It is very difficult to have an individualized decision across the state of Washington to get the right dose to the right house at the right time. Very difficult, and we're doing the best job we can.
He went on to say, and I want to mention this because equity became a big part of the conversation in this press conference day during Q&A. So they're trying to make sure that they're putting vaccine doses in areas for those disproportionately affected by COVID, right? So your people of color, the people who've got the higher case rates, things like that. So that has something he indicated after what he said right there. He said equity also plays into this. So I don't know if that means they're putting more doses over in that particular area because there's more Hispanics and they're disproportionately affected by COVID or exactly what, because there was no follow-up. But that would be my take on what he said.
I hear Benton County really needs it.
Yeah. Yep, that's what I hear too. I want to get to one more piece and then you guys can have some questions. There was more good news this time as it goes for renters and small business.
I'm today authorizing the Department of Commerce to distribute an additional $87 million for additional rental assistance and additional business assistance. That distribution will be split evenly for rental assistance and also business assistance through the state's disaster response account. We need to use this funding to keep our relief efforts going while we're waiting for further federal assistance.
And that federal assistance expected in the spring. There's also $2.2 billion in COVID relief that the state legislature just passed that would adds $325 million in more rental assistance, another $240 million for business assistance. That's expected to be signed next week sometime.
All right. That's mostly That's good news, this report.
It was really a very exciting press conference. He was in a very good mood.
That's all good.
Right. Hey. By the way, to let you know, the poverty rate in Yakima is about 24%. If you are a person of color in Yakima, about 34% poverty rate. King County poverty rate is 11%. And with poverty comes poor health and more confined living quarters with more people. Mm-hmm. So just generally, that's what you have. So that's
and
why
that's why a it's a disproportionate effect. Yeah, that's what they say.
So 93,000 people live in Yakima County. 404 people have died. And again, the numbers for those people that don't know, if you're under age 20, chances of surviving 99.995% survival rate. If you're 50 or younger, you're doing pretty well as well. You're about 97.9% chance of survival. So again, it's a small infinitesimal percentage of people that die of it. It's a nasty way to spend a couple of days with deep cough and off fever and everything else that goes with it. But again, if you have some type of additional health problems, you will struggle and possibly be part of the 0.0006% of people that could die from it from any age group. Just the perspective again. And I know he loves science, so I thought I'd give you a little bit of science there for you. Go ahead, Tom.
It's just a low bar, though. I mean, it's a low bar to say you don't die. I mean, most of us have all sorts of illnesses that we don't want to get, that we don't die from. It's not because we're afraid we're going to die. They're just uncomfortable, and we don't know enough about it to know
I'm looking at the positive. That's a happy day of news. I'm looking at the positive. That
it is
99% of people get over it or don't die from it, right?
Yeah. Well, more than 4,000 people have died from it in our state, from the 320-some-odd thousand of cases that we've had here. And there's a lot of concern about possibly increased death associated with particularly the South African variant, which is now in California, not yet here. So that's the kind of things he's talking about.
I got it. And more than 50% of those deaths occurred in nursing homes.
You are correct in that. But there's help for renters and small business.
That's the good news. And you got Nicole's question answered, and we stole it from the Dory Monson show. Thank you.
I know. I'm going to blame you, man.
That's all right. Bring it on. Tracy Taylor with more good news. Alrighty. Yeah. Kiel Mortgage, 1-888-778-KIEL. That's the number you dial, 1-888-778-KIEL. You want to refinance at home? That number is like sticking a couple of coins in a one-armed bandit and pulling that bad boy down and having that bell ring and that little bucket fill up with change. That's money you put in your pocket. You refinance that house at Kiel Mortgage, 1-888-778-KIEL. Alrighty, let's see. Tom, I assume as a kid you had many animals come and go, all loved, and then they would meet their timely demise with the needle, as my mom used to say. Moose and Sniffy and Mandy and Sniffy and Chain and Teeny. These are all the dogs we had. They all went to live on a farm. And I was like, wow. Is Teeny going to the same farm that Moose went to? And then they went to a farm, and we never saw them again. But they apparently lived happily ever after on that farm.
That did not happen with my childhood. We had late in my childhood, we got a dog, a great dog, Dusty. But no, it's my experience as a father. We've had so many animals in our household raising my two daughters that our farm happened to be in the backyard.
Oh,
so
okay.
We have many, you know, guinea pigs and gerbils and cats, all buried
rocks,
in the backyard.
All under, like, rocks. You'd find a good sized rock, right?
You did, and sometimes it's marked. So my kids got very used to going to animal funerals because my wife and the kids would very solemnly go out, and you know, it's it became quite the ritual. But I never thought of taking a pet to a pet cemetery. But apparently, that is an active thing.
That is, and for Deborah Horn, who ended up doing a story, apparently there's a pet cemetery, and the people at the – is it in Kent? Yeah, it's in Kent.
Kent.
There they were. I don't know how often you go and visit your animal at the pet cemetery, but you go there, and you just want to be peaceful, and you want to know that your beloved animal is there. And
she was 4 pounds. Then...
Dana Young walked over to where her cherished pet is buried at the Seattle Pet Cemetery off Military Road in Kent.
Right here. Daisy.
But instead of clear open sky looming overhead Daisy's final resting place, now stands a 100-foot cell tower.
This tall, this intruding evasive and not a good sight in the cemetery where we come to pray for our pets that's gone to heaven.
Neighbors are upset too, still chafing after they say King County officials dismissed their protests, calling this simply a landfill.
That makes no sense. You have to do is walk out here and see a site that's been here for 70 years, and there's humans along with the pets here. So it has a long historical history of it being a cemetery.
As it happens, pet cemeteries are not licensed in the state of Washington, and the law does allow cremated human remains to be here too.
So here we have Diane Velma Gray Bell. She was born in 1934 and passed in 2017.
Julie Seitz is leading the campaign, collecting signatures to undo what she sees as a terrible wrong.
We have been working to oppose, and we have not stopped.
And even though it has been built.
Even though it's been built, because we believe it has been built in bad faith.
They believe state law mandates that this is a cemetery and a cemetery alone.
We know that we have humans and we have pets. We have canine officer, at least one. And we are trying to protect their graves. We are hurt and we're angry too.
Okay. So normally when they do this, there is some public comment or they do let people know that those towers are going in, I assume. And maybe somebody didn't catch it. I wonder if they'd feel better. They sell these towers now that you can disguise them like pine trees. I wonder if they'd be okay with that, Tom.
Well, yeah, I mean, I understand the sensitivity of the people who actually go to the cemetery. I wonder if this pet cemeteries are visited more often than, human cemeteries. I don't know, but I can imagine it does kind of, impact the visual that if you did. I was thinking maybe what if they ended up trying to decorate the cell tower with like pictures of all the pets in that cemetery. In other words, make it kind of a memorial. In a lot of cemeteries, there are, big statues honoring the fallen from World War One. Maybe they could try to mask it as you suggest, but make it more kind of like a monument to all the pets and humans that are buried there. You laugh, John. I'm crying on the inside.
I didn't fall off that idea. I'm not going to have that big monument. I mean, maybe you could have some sort of thing like if, let's say they did a sculpture where it would be like a pig on the back of a cow, on the back of a dog, on the back of, and then like, and it just keeps going up and up and up, right? Like all the way up the food, literally up the food chain. And then, somebody's
fish. Oh, my God, that's even better. I was just thinking of a picture. So let's say there are 100 animals in that cemetery.
Yes.
I was just thinking taking a picture of them. No, we could actually form, they could pay, $100 and create a little life-size model. And then we could have one on top of the other. And then they keep, and then until it gets to 100 at the top of the cell tower. Cemetery is full, everybody. See, we are solutions-oriented.
Solving. And then that would be great. All right. Wasn't a joke, but that's the only sound effect I had for that one. There. Deborah Horn, hopefully you're listening. We just solved that problem for you. That's one. By the way, one part of me wants to kind of poke a little fun, but God bless that lady. She goes to a pet cemetery to pray for her animal.
I know. That seems a bit much. But as I realize with friends who don't have kids, pets are often like substitutes for kids. And so they pour whatever human emotion you have, sort of left over or you're not using, you can pour into your animal. And that's why I think some of these pets are revered, because they are the recipient of all that love you have for life.
Nicole Thompson, Dory's producer, is now has a kitten. And when her friends are like, oh, fur baby, she's like, no. I do not have a fur baby. This is a cat. And I am not the fur baby's mom. I am not a cat's mom. This is my pet. Like, no, that's a fur baby. Nope. No, I'm drawing the line on that one.
He thinks she doth protest too much.
Seattleize my relationship with my animal. Just kind of keep that apart. Plus, the other thing is, Hannah Scott is waiting to ask a question of the governor. I assume that the press conference is over. And Hannah has a question directly relating to Nicole
Thompson. Cemetery?
So.
Oh, Nicole.
Well, yes,
okay.
And the pet cemetery. That was her follow-up question. But her main one actually involves Nicole, Dory's producer. and we're hoping Hannah was able to get that question off to the governor. And
just
it has
don't let it
to
be known
Dory,
that
by
she's
the way.
Dory's producer, and he might
no,
answer.
No, 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 no. It wasn't. It wasn't oh. Dory. It has nothing to do with Dory.
Oh, okay.
It doesn't have to do with Dory. Yeah. On a big snow day, big snow weekend coming up. Tom, are you taking off tomorrow for the shovel out, the big snow, getting ready to prepare?
Yeah,
for it?
Tomorrow is my mom's 90th birthday, so we're having a big party just with my wife and I, and then we're doing virtual, you know, Zoom calls from all of our, you know, kids and all, so it'll be great.
How's your mom doing the Zoom? Is she up to date on all that stuff?
Well, yeah. In fact, we're doing Zoom one at a time because what we noticed when you have like five or six people on Zoom, it kind of like floods her circuit. So, you know, this is better just doing it one at a time. So, you know, my brother's at various points of the evening tomorrow will be checking in with her one-on-one. That works better.
I would assume you're just normally interrupting one another.
Yeah, that's right. And she just can't keep up with it.
You've explained John, the way you guys talk.
Exactly. That's why you're like I have four brothers. You're like my fifth brother. So you just get so animated that we're all trying to talk over each other.
By the way, the NFL is trying to get women to get into football by playing flag football. But then I looked this up, Tom. It says Russell Wilson announces flag football league in partnership with the NFL flag, Seattle Seahawks. So flag football is trying to get going just about everywhere. Seattle Seahawks star Russell Wilson has teamed up with the NFL flag to bring the newest official NFL flag league to the Seattle area. And I think this is both male. Yeah, it's male and female for football experience for boys and girls 4 to 14. I think this is primarily because the NFL feels pressure to stop kids from playing contact football where they can get concussions at early ages, and they want to put off hitting until about high school. So this is a chance for them to learn the fundamentals of football through flag football, but not be 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th graders playing contact, full contact football.
Except, I think that it's just girls' flag football.
Yes, that's what the story is, that the NFL's trying to get girls' football going. Yeah.
So we have a story you pointed out that this Super Bowl was like the lowest Super Bowl in 13 years or something in terms of ratings, that the NFL is slipping maybe in terms of overall spectator interest, although that's discounted a bit by all the streaming components of that. But they also are concerned that the number of kids playing football, boys mostly, playing tackle football is dropping precipitously because of the concussion concern. So what the NFL is doing is kind of trying to kill two birds with one stone. The first is they're trying to encourage girls in playing flag football, and they're hoping that they're offering, you know, with Nike, they're offering hundreds of thousands of dollars to these various leagues. Apparently there are four states that already have a state high school girls, you know, flag football championship, and they want to get that more and more because what they realize is once girls start playing flag football, they understand the strategy of tackle football and are more interested in it, and they think that that's a way to help grow the sport to balance out the fact that a lot of parents don't like their kids playing tackle football because of concussion concerns, which I think is pretty interesting.
Yeah, if they had I just looked online. They have a flag football thing here in Cle Elum. I would go play that.
Really? Well, you're a little. Maybe you could coach them, John. You're a little rusty.
Tom.
Yes.
It would be by age group.
Oh, well, you're getting far beyond the kind of the NFL hook then.
Yes.
Okay, that's fine, though. In general. Hey, listen.
Yeah, let me tell you. And there were like a bunch of 50-year-olds, I'd dominate.
Yeah, you dominate. That's right.
What are you laughing at?
Hold on a second. A team of 50-year-olds, the first team that gets a first down would be declared the winner.
Jacob, tell him how fast I am.
How would I know how fast you are?
I'm going to you.
You can go to our Facebook or Twitter page right now, and you can see how quickly you get out of the water after you dunk your head in. I mean, you're a little shaky, but you move pretty quick.
I don't get out gracefully. I'll say that. By the way, did you cut the F bombs out of that
thing?
I did.
Yeah, I cut it off right before those start.
Hey, as the only guy in the program that literally played in organized flag football when I was in junior high at Christ the King, I got to tell you, it's a great way to learn the game. I absolutely love the game, and it's because of the strategy you learn, in flag football. So I highly recommend flag football. I never once got a concussion either.
Yeah, well, you know what? As a guy that played Hard Knocks football, okay?
Yeah.
I'm talking about, like, Smash Mouth football.
The proof broke is in the leg, pudding.
Broke his leg. Broke last his leg. Play of the game. Broke my leg. Last play of the game. Last game of the season. Archers of Carroll against O'Hara.
Wow.
Tried out. Still going. I had nothing good going on there. Then, when at the age of 40, tried out for Seattle Prep football and made the team.
Yes.
Made the team when I was 40 years old.
Quite randomly, I ran into a guy who was on that high school team, and he did not have great things to say about you.
Tracy Taylor, look at traffic. Tracy's got Tracy right now. Tracy.